Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
All right, you have very little time to figure out what the song is before we start singing the words.
Despite all my rage, I'm still just a rat in a cage.
We both went Billy Corgan at the end.
At the end, despite all my rage. That was a song by Billy Corgan / the Smashing Pumpkins.
Yep, yep.
Because we're talking about a card that loves cages. And welcome to the Command Zone, everybody. It's a new location. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. No, check this out.
Hey.
We got, well, it's the Game Nights logo. Eventually, maybe we'll get a Command Zone logo back there for this.
We should.
We're on the new studio set for Game Nights.
Yeah.
So we're not gonna show you any of the rest of it. There's cool stuff to that side.
Secrets. When the next episode of Game Nights comes out in September, you're going to see the whole set.
On September 20th.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We actually know the real date now. Yeah. There's a whole lot to announce about that, but we won't get into it now because we're going to get right into the episode. We are going to deck tech Myrcil the Pretender today. But before we do, let's talk about our sponsors. CardKingdom.com/Command Zone. That is going to be the number one and only affiliate link you need to use from now on, by the way. We've had CardKingdom.com/GameNight/C17. We're simplifying it because we want it to be an efficient and great process for you. So just go to CardKingdom.com/Command Zone if you want to purchase magic products.
You know, we're going to talk about a whole bunch of cards for this Myrcil deck.
Oh, yeah.
And
you want to get the foil versions of all of them, right?
I mean, or regular. Yeah, I know you like foils. I'm not big on foils, but I'm just saying you're going to buy magic cards anyway. If you use the affiliate link, you're supporting the show. You're supporting Game Nights. You're keeping the lights on. You're helping us continue to make content. Another great sponsor that we have is Ultra Pro. And in fact, have you seen these, Jimmy?
Yes.
I brought these because they're a little bit hard to find, but Ultra Pro started making these special dice, which are specifically Planeswalker dice. You can see, and I'm sure Terry will put up a better picture of it. You can see that they're shaped like the little loyalty symbol in the bottom right corner of the Planeswalkers.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty sweet. So I know you like Planeswalkers, so I brought that for you, Jimmy.
For me?
Yeah, that's for you.
Oh, wow.
So
that's so cool. But Ultra Pro, thank you again for sponsoring the show as well. Another way to sponsor and support the show is directly through Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/Command Zone, you'll find our wonderful community there. And every week we shout out one lucky patron member randomly. This week it is
Planeswalker Project. Planeswalker Project, you rock. I wanted to say that. When we randomly chose that name, I was like, what is this? And, you know, I'm sorry, I had not watched your channel before, but I did go check it out. And it's a YouTube channel. It has quite a few subscribers, actually, 3,000 or 4,000, I think.
Nice.
And does some very cool videos with, like, deck techs. It's all commander-focused or mostly commander-focused. There's sort of top five lists, other cool stuff. I would encourage people to check out Planeswalker Project on YouTube.
Thank you for being a patron as well, Planeswalker Project.
Thank you very much.
That's so crazy. Do you think people call you Mr. Project? Or is it like, hey, what's up, Planeswalker? Hey, what up, Mr. P?
PP?
PP? Oh, no, that's not a good one.
All right, let's go straight into the deck tech for Myrcil the Pretender. You know, we had said in previous episodes this was the commander that I was looking forward to the most, so I built this. And the next episode, we're going to be breaking down the commander, Jimmy, that you were the most excited about. Ramos, is that what Ramos sounds like?
Yeah, no, that sounded like Ramos dying. Now I think about it, I think someone requested that we actually sing The Pretender by the Foo Fighters for this as well.
Oh. What if I say I'm not like the others? What if I... You know, a little aside, I did the trailer for the movie Death Race.
Oh.
And the final version of the trailer has Welcome to the Jungle on it, but an early version of that trailer had The Pretender on it.
I can't imagine Welcome to the Jungle was a cheaper acquisition for them.
No, it wasn't a price thing. We just tried a bunch of other things, but, you know, the way trailers work, there's often many different sort of versions in contention for a long time, and near the end they start to whittle away. And
I got you.
And Welcome to the Jungle won out. Anyway, all right, Myrcil the Pretender. Let me read the card. It is 1BB&RED, so 4 mana total for a 4/4 legendary creature, of course, a human wizard. Mm. It says, when Myrcil enters the battlefield, you may exile an artifact or creature card from your hand or graveyard.
Whoa.
And put a cage counter on it. And then Myrcil has all activated abilities of all cards you own in exile with cage counters on them. You may activate each of those abilities only once each turn.
Jeez.
So
Hold up.
There's a couple of wording things here and rules things just to clarify from the start.
I didn't realize it was from your graveyard too at the beginning.
Yeah. So when you play Marcel, you pick either a card in your hand or your graveyard and you exile it, and then you put a cage counter on it. And then Marcel has the abilities of that card, the activated abilities of that card. Now, the way this is worded, Marcel can obviously continue to gain more abilities as you go. So let's say Marcel dies, you play again, you exile another card. Now there's the first card that you had a cage counter on it in exile, and the second card, and now Marcel can activate for either or both of those abilities.
Jeez.
So you can start to accrue a lot of abilities, basically as many as you can manage to put cage counters on.
He's pretending very hard at that point.
We've compared Marcel to Siler from Heroes in the past, which I think is a pretty apt description. Now, they've kind of attempted to make this more fair by adding that little clause that says you may activate those abilities only once each turn. So keep that in mind throughout. That's something I think people tend to forget when they're brewing with this card.
You can't just sit there and be like, I'm going to do 80 things now. You got to just choose one.
Yeah, otherwise you could sort of get like an untap ability and a tap ability and just go infinite automatically. So you, not that you can't go infinite with Marcel, you definitely can. It's just there's an additional hoop to jump through. The other thing to keep note is that if a card references its own name, then that's actually referring to itself and not the card name. So I'm trying to think of...
Well, it's just like whenever... it's like when something enters the battlefield. So say when Marcel enters the battlefield, it's not saying specifically Marcel. It's saying when the card name that this is enters
when
the battlefield.
When this card enters the battlefield. But on activated abilities, it matters because sometimes you activate an ability and it says, you know, this card name does this.
Right.
That really says... You know, Marcel could work with that card, basically. It's not targeting that card name.
Yeah.
We'll get into some examples of that in a minute.
Like Tim's, right? Don't Tim's usually reference?
No, Tim's say deal one damage to target creature or player. I'm trying to think of something that references... Well, like Tree of Perdition would say, you know, exchange the life total of Tree of Perdition's toughness. Well, it's really saying exchange... Let me read the card. Okay. Tree of Perdition, and this is going to be a card that's in the deck, is 3 and a black for a creature plant, has defender, and it's a 0/13. But it says, exchange target opponent's life total with Tree of Perdition's toughness. But what that card actually says is, exchange target opponent's life total with this card's toughness. So that if Marcel gets that ability, Marcel's still a 4/4. Mm-hmm. If you Tree of Perdition somebody, now Marcel will be a 4/40, and that person will be at 4 life. So that's how cards like that work. Just for rules clarification. Sorry, it was so convoluted there. Okay, so what do we think about this card? What do you think about it when you see this card? Is it powerful?
Heck yeah, it's powerful. The big thing is that Wizards, and this is the exact same for Ramos, which is you can only do this special built thing once a turn. And obviously, blue is a color that has flicker abilities in it, and Ramos being a five-color deck can do a bunch of different ways to get that card in and out of the battlefield. The thing about Marcel that I really like is that he comes into play every single time that he was recast better than before.
Yeah, it's he like each actually time a little bit stronger, up. A little bit stronger. Yeah. Get this ability.
I pay two
now.
Mana for that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really
an
good
extra
point.
Two mana, yeah.
I do think, too, people are sort of underestimating the once per turn thing in that it says activate this ability only once each turn, not once on your turn.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these abilities, tap abilities, activated abilities, that's totally still broken because I activate on my turn, I activate on Jimmy's turn, I activate it on you know, Maria's turn, I activate it on Megan's turn. All of a sudden, I'm using it still 4 times on a rotation of the table. That's still insane. So, you know, remember the multiplayer aspect. Don't get caught in the cage of, oh, I can only use it once per turn. It's not that good. Well,
nice
if you
reference.
Can tap it, untap it, and do it 4 times... You don't need to go infinite. That's still going to be awesome with a lot of abilities.
Yeah. I mean, that's why all of our favorite untapper, each opponent's like untap step is so important. Like, that's the whole point. You got to do it 4 times. Sometimes you only need to do it twice or 3 times to really do the effect. Yeah. Or really have an effect. Like, it's the same way we're saying, like, if you're casting 3 cards in a single turn, you're on your way to victory.
That's usually a really, it's a really big sign that's saying, well, that person is winning because they're doing so much stuff.
Yeah.
So what's the plan for the deck that I decided to build? It's a ton of activated abilities. That's my favorite thing in Magic is just onboard abilities and just figuring out, you know,
well, technically
I can do this.
Offboard abilities as these cards. There's another strong part about this card is all the cards with cage counters, you cannot interact with them.
I mean, you need a processor, really, from Battle for Zendikar or something. That's really the only way. Nobody really plays those cards. I mean, maybe they will now if this deck becomes really good. I don't think this is like a tier one competitive deck either.
No.
And I did want to say that I built this deck to be powerful, but I didn't try and combo off... I think you can build versions of this deck that are literally trying to, like, there's a Sage of Hours combo with Anthroplasm that's, like, unlimited turns. That's not exciting to me. But it is the type of deck that you build enough synergy into it, you're just going to find infinite combos sometimes, kind of on accident. And so there are definitely some in there, but I didn't build the deck to sort of get to its combo as fast as possible. It's just going to have fun doing activated abilities, being like, look what my guy can do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I can do it three times. Okay, go. And that's kind of the way that I built it, and I think it'll be fun and powerful in
that
respect.
It can still win, though, right?
Oh, yeah. It definitely can win. It's definitely very powerful, I think, as a deck. I just don't think it's, you know, A1 top tier. It's probably on our power level scale. My guess, and, you know, again, we just built this deck, and, you know, I'm not sure, but my guess is it's around a 7-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. So let's start the breakdown with the most fun part of the deck, which is the cool activated abilities.
Who doesn't love cool activated abilities? And I suppose the first thing we are going to go for is Infernal Denizen. This card
is, you're gonna have to zoom in or go to the gatherer.
I gotta go to the gatherer because this card, it's like Chains of Mephistopheles. It's just not one that you want to read the original text for.
So this is an old card. It's from, I don't even know what it's from.
But here's the thing.
Terry's going to put it up on screen right now, and the text will be so small you won't even probably be able to read it.
Yeah, in fact, actually read the text on this card and then listen to what I'm saying about how differently they phrased things back in Ice Age. All right, so it's a 7-mana, or 7 in the black for a 5/7 creature demon. You're not summoning an Infernal Denizen anymore. At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice 2 swamps. If you can't, tap Infernal Denizen, and an opponent may gain control of a creature you control of his or her choice as long as Infernal Denizen remains on the battlefield. So obviously you never want this creature on the battlefield. I don't know why you'd play an 8-mana 5/7 with this, but it does have a tap ability. Gain control of target creature for as long as Infernal Denizen remains on the battlefield. So
it just steals creatures, and the thing about Marisil, and you'll notice that with many of these creatures, is that Marisil only takes the activated ability. It doesn't take that big downside.
Yeah.
So Marisil just exiles this card from your graveyard or your hand when he comes into play, and now can just tap and gain control of target creature for as long as Marisil remains on the battlefield.
Yeah.
Pretty simple.
Pretty cool, though.
Yeah, and very cool.
It makes your card evaluation totally different.
And I think you actually want to look for cards that have big downsides like that because they were balanced against the big downside, right? So
right.
They're going to have a better activated ability because, you know, whoever was designing the card is like, it can do something awesome because the downside is so big. Speaking of which, there's another card called Minion of Leshrac.
Also from Ice Age.
So this is 4 black, black, black. It has protection from black. It's a 5/5 demon. At the beginning of your upkeep, Minion of Leshrac deals 5 damage to you unless you sacrifice a creature other than Minion of Leshrac. If Minion of Leshrac deals damage to you in this way, tap it. We don't care about that, obviously. We're never going to play either of these first 2 cards. But you can just tap it and destroy target creature or land.
Bingo.
Bingo. So I like the versatility of being able to take out lands, too. There's lots of problematic lands in our format, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, Gaea's Cradles and Maze of Iths and kinds of junk. So, go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say, on the topic of, like, you're never going to cast these. This is a 7-mana legendary vampire. Oh, this could be your commander. Shaku Endbringer. Flying. 5/5. It can attack if there's another creature on the battlefield, and at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 3 life. But, activate ability, tap exile target creature and put the +1/+1 counter on Shaku. Nice.
Exile, just exile a creature.
Exile on a stick.
Yeah.
Now, these are all pretty cool because you get to do something, but you only get to do it once. That doesn't seem fun.
Yeah, well...
And we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about that in a minute. But I do want to say that there are other cards. There's like Avatar of Woe. There's a bunch of other ones to choose from. These are the 3 I chose. Steal something, exile something, or the third one is have a choice between land or creature.
I love this next one, though. This is great.
Okay, so the next one, and I've been looking for some place to put this card.
Me too.
I'm sure you have too, and it's hard to put into decks because of the casting cost.
So hard.
And it's just the kind of card that a lot of decks, you know, play big Eldrazi, but this one's hard to fit in. And so I'm glad this is a deck where it's like, yes, this card actually makes sense and will totally work. So,
except you're not really playing it.
Yeah, okay. Well, you're cheating a little, but that's what we do in Commander. It's Kozilek, the Great Distortion. So this is the new Kozilek, not the OG one. It costs 8 diamond. So 8 and 2, specifically colorless mana. For a legendary creature, Eldrazi, it's a 12-12. When you cast Kozilek, if you have fewer than 7 cards in your hand, you draw cards equal to the difference. Has menace. None of that matters because you're not going to use it that way. You're going to exile it and put a cage counter on it. And then it has an activated ability. It says, discard a card with converted mana cost X, colon, counter target spell with converted mana cost X. So this makes Myrsil able to start countering things with an activated ability. But the plus side is, and you mentioned it earlier, Jimmy, Myrsil can put cage counters on things from your hand or your graveyard.
Hey.
So pretty discarding sweet. A thing is actually something you want to do because you still have access to it for your sort of prime thing that you want to do, which is put cage counters on things.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like Kozilek in this deck. I think this is finally, we found the home for it.
Finally. You also like Tree of Perdition. We just talked about this. So Tree of Perdition is just this like really silly card from Eldritch Moon where if you can tap it, it's a 0/13. You exchange opponent's life total with this person's, with Tree of Perdition's toughness. So they'll go down to 13, which was the key number of that set. But if it's Myrsil, then it's 4. So you can take someone from 40 to 4, whatever life total they're at, 2/4, which seems pretty good because then they are dead to a lot of things.
In fact, they're dead to one of the other cards in the cool activated abilities category, which is Hate Flare. And this is a super interesting one in combination with Tree of Perdition. So if you ever get Tree of Perdition and Hate Flare with cage counters on them, you just kill somebody. So you Tree of Perdition, bring them down to 4, and then Hate Flare. You know what? I'm going to stop reading the entire casting cost and everything because we're only caring about the activated ability, right? So Hate Flare's activated ability is 2 in a red and the untap symbol. So the creature has to be tapped, and then you pay 2 in a red and you untap it. And it says Hate Flare deals damage equal to its power to target creature or player. Well, Hate Flare itself is a 5/5, but Myrsil is a 4/4, so we'll deal 4 damage to a creature or player and untap itself.
Right.
So
you just need one end step to Tree of Perdition them, and then on the upkeep or whatever, you can Hate Flare them.
You don't even need
to.
You can do it all in the same because Tree of Perdition, you tap it, bring you down to 4 life. Now, the Hate Flare is an untap ability.
Oh.
I pay 2 in a red, untap it, deal 4 damage to you.
So, yeah. Right. So Myrsil can do all of the abilities on him, but only once.
Only once
those.
On each ability per turn.
Yeah, I forgot about the untapping part of it. Yeah, you see this symbol so rarely, and normally it's like, oh, cool, it can be a really good blocker or whatever, but in this case, it's actually just totally sweet with Myrsil.
And, so untapping things is actually the next category, but before we move on to that one, there's a card that is one of the best cards in the deck, and you're going to build a bunch of cards around the idea of eventually getting this card into play, and you can get into some weird loops where you can kind of lock down the entire table with it, and it is
Nevenreal's Disc, because Myrsil can also exile an artifact out of your hand. So
yeah, don't forget, it's not only creatures. It's creature or artifact that Myrsil can sort of steal the ability from.
And usually those things are like, unless it's a mana ability.
But Myrsil can steal mana abilities. Too, yeah. I think actually Myrsil would be way less broken if they had put the...
Can't use mana abilities.
Okay, I mean, it's fine. It's better for brewers, I suppose. But anyway, Nev's Disc.
Nev's Disc is a great card by itself. It's a 4-mana artifact that comes in the battlefield tapped, and then you can pay 1 to tap it to destroy all artifacts, creatures, and enchantments. Normally, you have to play this and then wait a full turn cycle, and it's interesting because it does hold people hostage, but in Marisol's case, he doesn't come in the battlefield tapped. Also, let's say you already used Nev's Disc once in this game. It's in your graveyard. You cast Marisol and just exile it out of there.
You know, it's funny because I've been playing Magic since the very beginning, and Nev's Disc is one of the sort of original Magic cards. And yet I always assumed that Nev's Disc made you sacrifice it to use it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. It's just because it destroys itself.
Yeah.
You think that. But Nev's Disc is a tap ability, and if you can make Myrsil, indestructible or somehow avoid the wrath part of it, you can just hold the entire table hostage all the time by continuously using that ability. Because if Myrsil's not dying from it, you're in business. So
pretty good.
So anyway, let's keep Nev's Disc in mind. We're going to reference it a few times here. So a lot of those abilities you'll notice I chose, they cause Myrsil to tap. So that kind of is rough, right? Because now I can't use, let's say I put Tree of Perdition and Shaku Endbringer both onto Myrsil. Well, if I tap to Tree of Perdition somebody, I have to untap Marisil to then use Sharku Inbringer's ability. I can use each one once per turn, but I have to still obey the laws of tapping and untapping. So the next category is untap Marisil. Now, Hate Flayer is one way. We already talked about to do it. This is another really good way.
This is for Ben Bateman, who loves this card.
Call out to Ben Bateman, who,
this is our podcast.
So it's Pilipala.
I heard this name and I was like, that's not a real magic card. It is.
It's a real magic card.
And it's a Scarecrow.
It's a good magic card. Yeah, we probably should have talked about it more, but I don't think we've ever mentioned it on the show.
Well, it's just interesting because unless you're reducing the cost of it, it doesn't seem... I mean, there's a lot of ways to go infinite with this kind of effect, though, for sure.
Yeah. So it's 2 mana for a 1/1 artifact creature. A Scarecrow has flying, but it says pay 2 and has the untap ability. So Pilipala has to be tapped somehow, but you pay 2 and untap it, and you add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool.
Well, Marisil will be tapped for sure if he steals this ability.
So Pilipala really just gives Marisil a way to untap, and getting some mana back, it really ends up costing you 1 mana basically to untap
him. Yeah, as long as you use the mana that turn. Yeah.
Now remember, you can only use that Pilipala thing once per turn, but if I have Shaku, I've got Hate Flare, I've got something else, I can all of a sudden on your turn do it, on my turn do it.
Right.
Because I can use those untap abilities on everybody's turn, too.
Yeah, and then you have Horseshoe Crab, which is just a 2 in the blue, 1/3. But for blue, you can untap Horseshoe Crab. So this just gives Marisil the ability to untap himself for 1 blue, which is pretty sweet.
Yep, very useful. There's a really cool one, and this is an old one from, I think, The Dark, I want to say?
Yeah.
It's Eater of the Dead. And this ability is you pay 0, and then if Eater of the Dead is tapped, untap it, and exile target creature card from a graveyard. So you have to exile a card from somebody's graveyard to untap it, but it doesn't cost you any mana. You just, boom, you just untap Eater of the Dead, and again, you can do this once per turn.
Yeah, that's really absurd. I mean, here's the thing. If Marisil gets Eater of the Dead and untap ability and one other thing, you can just start like machine gunning down everything.
Again, you don't have to go infinite. If it's Shaku, you're just like, exile something on my turn, exile something on your turn, exile something on Megan's turn, exile something on Maria's turn. I mean, that's just untenable. You're going to be in such a good position if you're doing things like that.
Yeah, and then they were like, all right, fine, we'll kill Marisil. You just play it out the next turn.
Yeah, get another ability.
Yeah. Ramp time?
Yeah, let's talk about the ramp. And the ramp is interesting in this deck because Marisil can put cage counters on mana rocks.
You're finally not punished, actually, for putting it on mana rock, for putting like a Gilded Lotus in your deck. So that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, and we've talked about, I think, recently, curve considerations where we want our ramp to be. You know, we generally want our ramp to help us get to our commander, not cost more than our commander, that kind of thing. Not in this deck. In this deck, I just want the rocks that tap for the most mana.
Yeah.
Because Marisil, if I get it, him out, and I put a cage counter on something, I want Marisil to tap for 3 or so.
Wait, is Marisil guy or lady?
I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Marisil could be both. I do like the hair, but I don't. You know what? Marisil is just an it because it's becoming so many different things.
Marisil is pretending to be whatever it wants to be.
There you go.
Yeah. She has a wand, though, which I really like because that's very wizardly.
Yeah, definitely.
So the big rocks, and we're not going to read them because we talk about them all the time, but it's Gilded Lotus, Thrawn Dynamo. I like Mana Vault a lot in this deck because you don't have
punished.
The downside of it not untapping. And you can still play it on turn 1.
Yeah. And at a certain point, you know it's going to get blown up.
Yeah.
So. I mean, Mana Vault is just absurdly powerful.
I think you still play Signets, too, because a Signet on turn 2 helps you cast Marisil on turn 3.
Right.
So you still want those 2 mana rocks. So, you know, even though you would not imprint, or sorry, cage a Signet, because it's just not worth it to have Marisil tap for 1 additional mana.
True.
There's a really cool one that I like quite a bit, and it's called Patron of the Moon. This is an activated ability that works as ramp. There's not a ton of that outside of green.
Card says Moonfolk Offering on it. It's something I don't think I've ever seen in the deck.
So Patron of the Moon, it's a 7-mana card again. I'm not going to read all of it, but you can pay 1 and put up to 2 land cards from your hand into play tapped.
Pretty cool.
So just think about that's burgeoning, basically. Maybe even better, possibly, because I can do that on my turn, on your turn, on everybody else's turn. So that,
combined with some card draw, it's very powerful.
Yes, exactly. You have to combine it with card draw. So interestingly, that will be our next category.
Hey, I dig it.
I like to talk about sort of the intricacies of how you use different card draw spells in different decks. So in some decks, you just want, you know, Consecrated Sphinx and Rhystic Study. And in some decks, you want
Arcanist the Omnipotent. Actually, both of these activated abilities are incredibly good.
Yeah.
Arcanist may be the best target, I think, for Marisil, just based on this, now that what I'm seeing. And I like drawing cards. Mm-hmm. Anyways, Arcanist is a 6-mana 3/4 wizard. You can tap him to draw 3 cards, or you can pay 2 blue-blue to return him to its owner's hand. So it's got this self-bounce ability. In limited, it's just absurd because it's if it sticks around for one untap phase, that person's drawing three cards and they have the forever ability to return it to their hand if you ever try to remove it. Pretty good.
Yeah, so it protects Maricel, also allows you to bounce Maricel back to your hand so you can replay and get more cage counters on more stuff. Also just taps and ancestral recalls. I like Arcanist because Arcanist is a spell that you would be willing to just play.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to put a cage counter on it. So this is a very powerful card. I agree. I think it's one of the best cards in the deck.
Another one. You don't hear that too often, actually.
That Arcanist is?
Yeah, Arcanist is always like, oh, it's really
a
good,
little
but
too
six
slow
mana.
And a lot of that's, yeah. The next one is Magus of the Bazaar. So,
I can't believe this is this affordable.
Yeah, well, the Maguses don't tend to be super expensive. So it's one in a blue for an 0-1, but it says tap it, draw two cards, then discard three cards.
It's trying to be Bazaar of Baghdad.
Yes, exactly. And this is a very powerful effect because you get card selection, and again, going to the graveyard is basically just as good for most of your cards as if it's in your hand, because you're going to want to cage counter stuff. So this allows you to cycle through your deck, find the really important cards that maybe are the cards you can't put cage counters on, and the ones that you can, you put into your graveyard. So I like that one a lot. The next one is
Jace's Archivist.
This is one of those cards that's like on the periphery of being used in a lot of decks, and I always end up cutting it, but I think this is a deck for it.
It's a one blue. You can tap, pay a blue and tap the Vedalken Wizard to have each player discard their hand and draw cards equal to the greatest number of cards a player discarded this way. So don't do it to the person that just drew 1,000, because then everyone mills out, but...
I mean,
well,
it's
I,
not
guess,
the
I
worst.
Guess yeah,
you
it's
just,
not the worst.
You just draw,
but no, it's pretty sweet though. I like having windfall effects, especially if this is a Maricel specific windfall effect.
Yeah, and again, you're sort of drawing even the cards you're discarding. I mean, you still have access to them. So.
Yeah,
and that's another reason I would say that for a lot of the other card draw, I would use wheel effects, Wheel of Fortune, windfall, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would fill out my card draw with wheel effects because, and specifically the ones that dump cards into your graveyard and have you draw more, not the ones that have you sort of shuffle them into your library, because I want more stuff in my graveyard that I can just have more options to cage things.
Yeah.
So, okay. We got stuff in our graveyard. We got some cool stuff we want to put cage counters on, but man, it's going to be slow because what am I going to do? Cast Maricel, put a cage counter on something, and then hope it dies somehow, or what am I? So, the next section is two things. Maricel is like, this is one of those decks that's very reliant on its commander.
Yeah, I will say that if you look at all your curve and your creature cards, you just don't want to play any of them.
Yeah,
and you're
you
also
can't
putting
cast
yourself
a lot of them, right?
Yeah. And if you're exiling from your hand, then you're also putting yourself a card disadvantage. Oof.
So
tough sell.
The next section is called Protect, because I don't want Maricel to die.
And Serve.
And Collect.
And Collect.
Because I want Maricel to be gathering more abilities as he goes, or as she goes. I have no idea. As it goes.
You'll float too.
So, yeah, this is a good one.
The Soul of New Phyrexia, once deemed one of the top 10 artifacts by Jimmy Wong, incorrectly. But I was really stoked on it.
We're trying to get it back
up. We're getting it back there, yeah. So it's a 6-6 for 6. It has trample. It's a colorless. You can actually pay 5 and permanent to control gain indestructible until end of turn. It also has the activated ability. You can pay 5 to exile Soul of New Phyrexia from your graveyard and permanent to control gain indestructible until end of turn. I don't see that being as relevant unless for some reason.
I mean, you're dumping stuff in your bin quite a bit.
Yeah, all right. So Soul could just be there.
It could just be there and you could just want to use it. But think of this. You got Nev's Disc on Maricel and you've got Soul of New Phyrexia on Maricel.
Oh, for 6 mana?
You just wipe everything.
Except for your stuff.
Yep. So that seems pretty good.
Yeah, that's a winner.
It's a very Josh thing
that's
to do.
That's a less convoluted combo than how your Marchesa deck
that's
wins.
That's really true. Maybe I take apart Marchesa and this deck.
It is Grixis, so it is very fitting.
That's funny, because I made Marchesa into a 5-color deck, and then I'll make this. I'm not making this 5-color, which, by the way, I don't think would work. This is actually what I think is the single best card in the deck, as far as it just has the correct amount of versatility for what you want, and it's going to get you off to the best start.
Well, it kind of also has 4 activated abilities on it. So
it's Aetherling. Aetherling is a creature, and again, I'm just going to read the activated abilities. It has 4 of them. Only 2 are really relevant. You can pay a blue, and you exile Aetherling, and then return it to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. And then you can also play a blue and make it unblockable this turn. You can do that thing that blue does where you give it +1/-1, or -1/+1 also with blue. That's not, again, very relevant. It might be sometimes if you're going to swing in unblockable and finish somebody off. I guess you could do it.
Yeah.
Really, the thing you're doing here, though, is using the blue mana to flicker Maricel. So That flicker both protects Marisil from removal and board wipes because it comes back at end step. And when Marisil enters the battlefield, you cage more stuff. So that's a way. If Aetherling is what you cage first with Marisil, you're in super good shape because now you, on an end step, you know, or at some point, flicker, get another ability. Flicker, get another ability. And you could very quickly, by one rotation of the table, get four or five abilities on Marisil. And now you're really rolling.
Yeah. Yeah, there have been a few cards like Aetherling, but none that have just a straight, you can exile itself. That's a very rare thing to see on cards these days, so that's pretty neat.
Again, Nev's Disc.
Yeah.
Activate Nev's Disc in response to that trigger, or to that activated ability, you blink Marisil out, everything gets blown up, Marisil comes back at end step.
Yeah.
Works very good with Nev's Disc. This is another version of Aetherling, basically.
Yeah, this is really interesting. When I saw this, I was like, oh, this is very clever. It's Argent Sphinx, and it can do essentially what Aetherling's first ability is for blue to exile it and then return to the battlefield under your control at the beginning of the next end step, but it has Metalcraft, which means you have to do it. You can only do it if you control three or more artifacts. But still, the ability, I think, is one of the most important things to reuse Marisil. So I would bet on be like, sure, I'll have three artifacts out.
And you have a lot of artifacts in the deck because you have the ability to sort of cage artifacts. Oh, so you got Signets, you got Sensei's Divining Top, which is another very good target. You have, here's another artifact.
You finally found a way to get rid of Sensei's Divining Top.
Yeah, and think of how good Top is with a cage counter on it, because it also protects Marisil because you can put it on top of your library.
To his library to draw a card, yeah.
Yeah, and so.
Crazy.
Yeah. Ooh. This card is one of those cards we keep mentioning, and I think it's just going to be one of those really good cards in Commander forever. It's Mirage Mirror. This is from Amonkhet. It's 3 mana for an artifact. It's Amonkhet, right?
I think this is our. Okay. I see the Limbolas horns.
Oh, yep. It's from Hour of Devastation. My bad. Sorry, everybody. It's an artifact. Costs 3 mana, but it says you pay 2, and Mirage Mirror becomes a copy of target artifact, creature, enchantment, or land until end of turn. Now, remember, if you do this, Marisil's not Marisil anymore. It doesn't have all the other activated abilities.
Right.
But it can become interesting things that are on the battlefield that you maybe want to use right then.
Rocks.
Crazy creatures. I like the ability to become a land to dodge things that say destroy target non-land or exile target non-land permanent or right. Cyclonic Rift. I turn into a land and all of a sudden Cyclonic Rift returns all non-land permanents to their owner's hand.
Man.
If I turn into a land, you can't. Yeah, I dodge that. So
it's such a good mirage.
Yeah. So that is just a very versatile ability that I really like.
Yeah.
And it has the ability to protect and do other things.
Yep. Now, of course, because you have all of these tap abilities, one thing that you really want to do is be able to do it at instant speed / do it when the creature comes down. Because I think there's nothing worse than the Marisil being played and then you have to wait a full turn to use a tap ability on it.
Yeah, you have to be hasty. You really need to play Marisil and be able to use stuff right away.
Yeah, so you have, obviously, Anger, which, because you're pitching stuff to the graveyard, already has a great spot there. If it's in your graveyard, your creatures get haste. I think you have to control a mountain
as well.
You have to have a mountain as well, yes.
You're going to have a mountain.
And then this card I don't think sees enough. It's Thousand Year Elixir. Sees enough play. 3 drop artifact. And you can play the activated abilities of creatures you control as though those creatures had haste.
Yep.
And you can pay 1 to tap the Thousand Year Elixir to untap target creature. So worst comes to worst, you can just exile this with Marisil and you get another untap ability.
Yep. Oh, it sort of has to tap itself to untap itself.
Eh,
I don't know if that
maybe
works.
Not.
But you play it out. And it works really well as sort of a haste generator and gives you an extra activated ability if you don't have a Pilipala or something like that.
Right.
Or you don't have the mana to do maybe Hate Flare or something. Also, just some other quick ones to mention, Hall of the Bandit, Lord, Lightning Greaves. Those are good haste enablers that are definitely in the deck. And then we're going to finally sort of wrap up. And obviously, the full deck will be in the show notes. We can't talk about every card. It would be a super long show. So there are many other cards in each of these categories. But the last category that we want to talk about is more than once per turn. So we want to circumvent that text on Marisil that says you can only use each ability once per turn. There's a couple of cards that do it. These are the ones that are going to have the highest ratio of sort of going infinite when you play them.
Uh-huh.
So be careful. I'm not saying don't go infinite. I'm not saying do. You know,
you will
it's funny.
Paint a target on your back with this one, though.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. As we've always done the show more, played Commander more, I find myself shying away from infinite combos more and more. I still have them, and occasionally I still do, but I definitely don't build my decks to do it. So
I think once you've won with infinite enough times, you're kind of like, okay, I get it.
It's fine.
Yeah.
You know, I don't feel particularly awesome when I do it, but it's fine. So both of these cards I would put on the sort of maybe I would include, maybe I wouldn't, but we would be remiss if we did not mention that.
The Danger Zone.
This card is one of the ones that gets mentioned maybe the most or among the most as far as like cards that maybe should be banned in the format. Now, I do not think it should be banned, but it turns out it's going to be good in Marisil, and the next week when we talk about Ramos, it's going to be good again.
Yep.
So
Deadeye Navigator.
D-E-N, Deadeye Navigator. So it has Soul Bond, which means you pair it with a creature when it enters the battlefield or when the other creature enters the battlefield. Mm-hmm. And then as long as Deadeye Navigator is paired with another creature, both creatures have this ability. One in a blue, exile this creature, then return it to the battlefield under your control. Now, a few things to note here. Deadeye Navigator returns the creature immediately. So now, oh, I should clarify this too. This is one of the rare cards in the deck you don't want to put a cage counter on because... Yeah. Deadeye doesn't actually have an ability, an activated ability. It won't give that flicker ability to Marisil because because of the wording. It basically, that ability doesn't exist until it's Soul Bond. The thing is, if you Soul Bond the Deadeye Navigator in play to the Marisil, now you flicker Marisil, and when Marisil comes back in, it's a new creature. So it doesn't care that it activated the abilities before and you get around the once per turn thing. So yeah. As long as you have a haste enabler and Deadeye, you can use your abilities as many times as you feel like. And you can start to do things like generate infinite mana with Gilded Lotuses and Staff of Dominations and things like that. So that's one way around the once per turn limit as far as using the abilities. This is another one.
Quicksilver Elemental. It's a 3 blue for a 3/4 elemental. You can pay blue and Quicksilver Elemental gains all activated abilities of target creature until end of turn.
It doesn't say another target creature, which would make it way better in this case.
Yeah.
But, I mean, sorry, better just from a game design perspective. But because it doesn't say that, you can copy, Marisil can copy the abilities Marisil already has.
Yeah.
Now,
and Quicksilver can copy it as well if you just want to play this by itself.
You can play Quicksilver and, yeah, have Quicksilver sort of be in play with Marisil and start to basically do the same things you could do if Marisil cage counters the Quicksilver.
But just twice as many now because you have a Quicksilver Elemental. By the way, this clarifies that rules clarification where it says if any of the abilities use that creature's name, use this creature's name instead. So it's just clarifying what we were talking about earlier.
There's been an interesting rules thing with this too, so we should walk through that. So, all right. Let's go over this really quick here. So it's a little complicated, right? Marisil, let's say, has 4 abilities on a cage counter.
Mm-hmm.
You activate each of those abilities once, then you activate, 4 and the Quicksilver Elemental. So the Quicksilver Elemental has a cage counter on it, and Marisil has 4 other abilities. Let's just say you've gone off and done some Siler stuff, and Marisil's gotten pretty sweet. You activate the other 4, then you activate the Quicksilver Elemental to gain, and Marisil targets himself. And now gains all the abilities he had. But those abilities can now be activated once more each turn.
Yeah, because he has double copies of each of them. And
right, and one of them is the Quicksilver Elemental. So he can activate the ability to copy all the abilities again.
Yeah.
Now, it seems, and there was some argument online, it seems as if the Quicksilver Elemental, when it copies the abilities, shouldn't also get the Rider Clause of can only be activated once each turn. Mm-hmm. But... Eli Schifrin, I think, is the name. It used to be Matt Tabak, and now it's Eli as sort of the overall rules manager, the ultimate rules authority in Magic. Mm-hmm. And Eli came on and said that when Quicksilver Elemental gives the ability of all the activated abilities to that creature, it actually does keep the only can use it once per turn thing.
Oh.
So you can still go infinite with Quicksilver Elemental, but you need to pay mana each time. You need to account for the 1 blue mana each round of activations
to keep gaining,
to keep doing it. I know that sounds complicated. It really is complicated.
Stack is not for the lighthearted.
It really is complicated. Anyway, those are the two sort of big ways that I put in the deck to get around the once per turn thing. You can start doing crazy stuff. But I think that it's sort of underrated the fact that you can just use it in a multiplayer game on everybody's turn.
Yeah.
That alone is powerful enough.
Yeah, it's like the Prophet of Kruphix status, minus how good that card was. But to a certain degree, it's pretty good. I mean, I think the best way to use this deck, because you need a ton of card draw, unless you're constantly pitching stuff to the graveyard to exile that instead. Because every time you play Marisil, then you're losing a card out of your hand. But if you're losing it out of your graveyard, then great.
you have some really powerful tutors, things like Buried Alive, Entomb.
That Gamble is great too, actually.
Gamble, because you don't care if you keep it or not. That can sort of guarantee getting the Aetherlings, the Argent Sphinx, and the things that are really going to sort of get that snowball to start rolling down the hill. So I think that's important too. There's a card I wanted to talk about. Because when we're building these decks, you know, we're going online. I asked on Twitter. I'm just gathering all the information I can, just like everybody else does, to try and build the best deck that we can. And there was a card that popped up quite often that I don't think is actually very good, and I wanted to talk about it for that reason. And it's, sorry, I should clarify, is not that good, I think, in this deck. It's very good in many decks.
But this was like a top recommended card on EDH Rec. It seems like a lot of people are just automatically throwing it in.
Yeah, and I didn't choose to include it. I don't think it's horrible. I just don't think it's great, and it's Panharmonicon. And the idea being that you can cage two things whenever you play a Marisil. Now, if Panharmonicon was a Panharmonicon is a 4-mana artifact, and it basically doubles all your Enter the Battlefield abilities. In this deck, the only Enter the Battlefield ability you really have is Marisil, which seems good, except for that the CMC of both spells is the same. Panharmonicon costs 4, Marisil costs 4. I can't imagine a world where I ever want to play Panharmonicon and then Marisil.
Right.
So, to me, that
even if you could ramp it out? If you could like turn 3 it into a turn 4 Marisil,
I think I'd still rather play Marisil first. I believe most of the time, and get that going. So I just don't think. And then once I've got an Aetherling or an Argent Sphinx, or I'm bouncing it back to my hand and replaying it, I'm fine. I think I don't need twice as many. I can subsist just fine with just one. Yeah. I don't think Panharmonicon's awful.
If it only works with one card in your deck, and I had to cut a card for mine that I'll talk about in the Ramos episode that only worked with my main commander, it's just not worth it.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to talk about that a little bit.
You know what?
I could be wrong. Panharmonicon maybe is worth it.
I don't know. I mean, look, if you have your like your ways of bouncing and reusing him multiple times a turn, I think that's better to have those, because those cards also work as things he can exile, except for Deadeye, but that I think is a special.
Well, Deadeye can still flicker him, and you're still getting more abilities each time he comes back
in. Exactly.
So,
yeah, exactly. So.
Anyway,
I do not disagree with you. I would like to tell everyone that Geth, Lord of the Vault, is also in this deck. One of my favorite black cards.
I mean, if you're going to make everybody wheel and you're going to give Marisil activated abilities, that seems like a gimme, right?
Yeah.
I might as well just start growing stuff out of here. This deck is going to have the ability to generate a ton of mana.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, if Marisil is a Gilded Lotus and a Pilipala. And
you can only
do it once per turn, but that's still a lot of mana every turn, right?
You get net 7 or something.
You get 3, you use 2 of it, you get 2, but then you're untapped, so maybe you have like a Thrawn Dynamo on it too. So now all of a sudden, you know, Marisil himself could be generating 5, 6, 7 mana pretty often. You know, you have a Horseshoe Crab maybe on there too, and you're not infinite, but you can just do it enough that
you make a ton of mana.
Yeah, you make 7, 8, 9 mana with Marisil every turn. So.
In the colors you want.
Yeah, so you want things like Geth and other outlets, just like, well, if I'm not infinite, but I just happen to be able to generate like 20 mana, I want to be able to use it in some way. So, all right, that is Marisil the Pretender. To the listeners, what do you think about Marisil the Pretender, and how would you build her? What did we miss? What did we get wrong?
Nothing.
Obviously, there's some combo stuff that you could put in there, and I think you can build combo Marisil.
I want to see what the best infinite combos are with Marisil, although I'm sure they're all going to be along the same lines of make a ton of mana or something.
There's Sage of Hours, like I said, with Anthroplasm. There's some Lab Maniac stuff. I'm just bored by Lab Maniac personally, there's always a Lab Maniac combo or three running around. Anthroplasm allows you to add the counters, and then Sage of Hours allows you to take off counters.
So yeah,
you
just make both of them, and then
get infinite turns. And because of, you know, Buried Alive and Entomb and some other stuff, you have the ability to sort of very quickly find those pieces.
You also found the right deck for Intuition, a card that I've always thought just could never find a spot for, which is it's a tutor in blue where you get to search for 3 different cards, or just 3 cards, and then you show them to your opponent. They choose one, you put that in your hand, and the rest go in your graveyard.
So you put them in the damned if you do, damned if you don't category, where it's it doesn't matter where you put them, graveyard or hand, I'm still going to cage them.
Cage it up.
Despite all my rage.
I'm still just a Marisil in a cage. Or all the cards Marisil has stolen and throw them in cages. If only you could target other people with Marisil's ability.
Yeah, that'd be sweet too. Although you'd still want to build the deck the same, because you wouldn't count on them having activated abilities.
If I was playing you, I would.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like half my decks have awesome activated abilities. Well, you know, hey, you are what you are. What do you want?
That's true.
That's what I am. So if you think this deck sounds cool and you want to order some of these cards, the place to do it is cardkingdom.com/commandzone. Again, that's our affiliate link now for all things. If you watch game nights, if you watch our unboxings, you want to support us, you want us to keep doing cool content, use that affiliate link when you order cards and you'll be keeping all that stuff going.
Yeah. Not to mention, we've been looking at this deck on Tapped Out, and every time you go to one of the pages, it shows you the price that it's selling here and somewhere else. And Card Kingdom is always listed. And so far, I have not seen one foil version that was more expensive.
Card Kingdom's prices on foils are really, really good. Card Kingdom is just good in general.
Just good value. So make sure you guys go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. Also, big thank you to Ultra Pro, who continue to make really cool products specifically for Magic, like these awesome Planeswalker dice, which I cannot wait to use. Thank you, Josh.
Yeah, well, you're going to use them a lot more than me. I don't run a lot of Planeswalkers.
That's true, actually.
Yeah, but I will be excited every time you pull one of those out.
Yeah.
Except for then you're going to tick it up, and you're going to doubly season, and I'm going to lose. But I'll be like, but the dice were cool.
The dice were cool.
Ultra Pro making a lot of cool stuff lately, so I'm excited for all the things that they keep doing. And the fact that they're continuing to make better and better stuff is really exciting.
Yeah. Improvement, something that you're looking at the literal result of as we sit here.
You're looking at a small piece of it. That's all we can show you right now.
We don't want to spoil the surprise. There's a lot of fun stuff coming up. So obviously we don't want to, scoop the lead or something? What was it?
Bury the lead. Yeah. We're also trying to, we're stalling right now because we're trying to think of an end step. Because now it's time for the end step.
Where we talk about something cool outside the world of magic.
You can see our eyes looking around the room. Is there anything?
I can tell you one of my favorite improv games.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So this improv game is really simple, and we just did it, where you start to try and say what the other person is saying at the moment that you're talking.
Wow. This improv game is fun.
You know what else is fun? Wow, I didn't expect it to go there. You had a light in your eyes.
I was like, oh, the light bulb came on.
That's a really fun improv game. I don't know if there's a name for it, but it forces you to stare at the other person and look at their lips and be like, what are you saying next?
Wait, for real, when you did improv?
Yeah.
What was your favorite improv game that you guys would do?
That was one of them. We also did a game called Zip Zap Zop, which is really simple, where you just go zip to a person across in a circle. You go zip, and then they go zap to someone else and zop. And you literally just do that. Zip, zap,
wait,
zop.
Wait, you do that on stage?
No. These are warm-ups.
What are the... on stage, what was your favorite improv sort of...
My favorite setup was usually, because we didn't do games, we weren't a performance group in that way. Whenever I did improv, it was always hey, give me something that is this size, and you change it up each time. And then my favorite was when someone would take that and then literally never reference it until maybe the last moment where it all comes around. It's do you want some watermelon? And she's like, oh, we got there.
We did this one where we'd pull up an audience member and we would be puppets, so we weren't allowed to move, but they were supposed to move us however we were talking about. So I'd be like, oh, hi, Jimmy. It's nice to meet you. And they'd grab your hand and shake it. But then you'd come up with oh, man, I really got to do some push-ups right now. And they'd have to bend you.
That's great.
Yeah, that was my favorite.
Audience participation is always fun.
Yeah. Anyway, improv. Cool. Improv. Check it out.
Check it out. Yeah, check it out.
You know what else you should check out is the Masters of Modern podcast. Alex Kessler, Ben Bateman. Kessler was just on the show last episode. They talk about the modern format and all things competitive magic and... very often recently, they talk about Commander quite a bit. They just did a Commander 2017 set review.
Cards that we wish were in Modern.
That's the most sure thing, loosely guys. Tied no problem. This was basically Kessler and Ben being I want to talk about these Commander cards, but I have a Modern podcast.
Yeah.
And they're screw it. Let's just talk about it.
I didn't listen to the episode. I probably should, but I'm guessing Teferi's Protection's on there.
It's got to be.
That would be the most powerful spell in Modern ever.
I listen to their show sometimes, which is better than them. They never listen to our show, so,
Wow.
Yeah, that's throwing them under the bus. Anyway, but you should definitely check them out because, like I said, even I listen to them and I don't even play Modern. So you can find them on Twitter at the MMcast or right next to us at collected.company.
All right. Our editor for the show is Terry Robertson, who may be joining us in Los Angeles soon, I believe.
Terry's coming down because we're growing so much. We're like, Terry, no, we need you 24/7.
We need you
24/7.
So hopefully you guys are going to see more. You're going to see more of him soon, hopefully. And of course, you can always see the work that he does on the show at youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast, where he is our editor for the show. Special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who has done quite a bit of stuff for us recently that, again, we cannot reveal all of it. But
the thing right over there to my left that Jeffrey did is going to be sweet. You guys, it's going to... you guys are going to freak out when you see it on game night.
September 20th. Get ready.
Hype.
And you can find Jeffrey on Twitter at LivingCardsMTG. You can also see his work on our videos. At the beginning, at the end, he does the Living Card animations there to give you a hint as to what he may have helped us with recently.
He's pretty good at those.
Yeah.
Totally unrelated to what I was talking about before. He's good at those.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And we will see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.